This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Winston's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, is the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't Bismarck? Wasn't that
Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast, the one and only Place to Be podcast, coming at you live here on this Thursday evening, a rare Thursday night edition. Got some football on, got some NXT on, Impact's on the way. It's almost like, almost feels like the fall already, Scott Criscola, having football on Thursday nights.
Absolutely.
A shitty game, Jacksonville, Chicago, so we're right in the Thursday night wheelhouse already.
Your favorite running back, Matt Forte? No. Ruxin's favorite running back, Matt Forte. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 327 of the Place to Be podcast. It is a rare Thursday evening. And my network involved in those Thursday nights. I think the first game is, I think it's Steelers-Ravens is the first Thursday night. Well, the first CBS Thursday night game. I think the actual opener is what? Seahawks hosting somebody. Green Bay, I think.
Yeah, I think you're
Packers
right.
Or Saints or something. I think it's the Packers. Anyway, tonight... We're talking right now about good football teams and bad football teams. Tonight, we're going to dive into the Big Steel Box for a show that, on paper, it's so easy to go, oh God, this thing sucked. But if you have the guts to watch it, your opinion will change a little. Not a lot, a little. Because we're in the same city where getting screwed is a hobby.
Mm-hmm. It was an instant teleport back to 2003 with the show airing that song over and over.
Oh, God. Tonight. Well, let's open. Is he there? I'm sure he is. Oh, no. Maybe Sutton
kicked
him out.
Hey, what is going on here?
Nothing.
School's starting soon. I was thinking I'm going to have to deal with the stupid school buses now on the way to work. Like, next week. It's so nice never having to worry about them, you know?
I know. School. I feel like school's starting, like, as we get older, I feel like school starts for people earlier and earlier.
Back to school.
Back to school.
One day
vacation. Throw your homework. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you No Way Out.
Of Texas.
Yeah. 2003. Is this show better than that? Yes, I think so. Because we talked, JR, when we started this calendar year about, oh, God, 2003. Ugh. Crappy world heavyweight title matches.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, for the most part, that is true.
Yes.
But that doesn't taint the year. And this is one of those weird shows where when I finished watching it today,
yeah,
I went, there was some stuff there that actually wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when we break it down, I think listeners may May agree, may not.
Well, I think
depends on
I think
taste.
People tend to remember the couple of big matches towards the end. And if you overlook the middle, which is pretty solid, so we'll talk it over now.
Yes. February 23rd, 2003, live from the Bell Center, or as Aaron George probably calls it, Le Center Bell in Montreal, Quebec.
Le Center asshole.
We have not been here on pay-per-view, JR, since It.
Mm-hmm.
So we all know what It is. They have been at Raws and SmackDowns. You remember the Raw in 2002
yep.
when Hulk Hogan came in with the after winning at Backlash and he had like the 14-minute standing ovation. So they have been there, but they have been out on pay-per-view since, of course, the 97 Survivor Series. Your attendance, 15,100. Good crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Your buy rate, pretty solid, 0.87, and no shock there because of the loaded card in terms yep. of characters. Your announcers, your normal announcers at ringside on SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz. Taz having this weird actual like Jerry Curl mohawk thing going on.
I thought Ben Morse put it best. He looked like yes. a fat 13-year-old in his dad's suit.
In his dad's suit. Yeah. It was like all puffy. And
it was yeah, like, it was like a little too big for him, but he's fat and he was kind of sweaty and he had the weird kind of like gelled hair, like yeah. combed straight. It was very thin. It was very...
Meanwhile, Cole looked like a fucking Russian assassin with a leather jacket and that weird
very
mustache
weird.
Thing.
A lot of pretty loose on Thursday nights on SmackDown.
Yes, they look like a couple of
swingers. Casual Fridays. Or casual
Meanwhile,
Thursday
out years. In the bowels, the Raw announcers, Jonathan Coachman, the coach, is play-by-play.
First time
because,
ever.
Yeah, because JR is selling a storyline, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And, of course, Jerry the King Lawler. And I noticed this today. It's no secret, obviously. Jerry the King Lawler had a facelift. It's pretty obvious.
Yes.
And on this show, you can actually see the line under his chin. Like, you can see where they stretch the fucking face. It's pretty obvious. But so the announcers all had their own funny quirks quirks on this show. Any heat matches, JR?
Yes. Let's just run out a couple of facts about the show.
Oh, yes, of course. The Sutton facts.
Yes, the Sutton facts. So, No Way Out was sponsored by Starburst. The song, as we mentioned before, Bring Me to Life by Evanescence.
Has that song gotten old?
Has it got old? I think it was old when I first heard it.
Well, has time heard it? Like Greenhouse today said that he thinks the song still holds up.
I mean,
compared
guess,
to
yeah.
some other pay-per-view songs.
You're into new rock kind of music, I guess.
Yeah, that song was good, though. That song wasn't bad.
I think it holds up because it was a famous song.
Right.
Like, I think a lot of these are not famous songs. They're just kind of songs. So
slapped
I think
together,
that's why right. it holds up in your mind because you actually heard it outside of here.
That's true.
All right, roll call. We have Kurt Angle and Triple H, still our world champions. Lance Storm and William Regal had defeated the Dudleys to regain the titles on January 20th from the Dunkin' Donuts Center in Providence.
Next night? Yep, the night after. We said that.
We have new WWE Tag Team Champions as Team Angle. Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin have won the gold from Los Guerreros on the 2-4 SmackDown from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Cruiserweight champion still Billy Kidman with his fleas. And the women's champion is still Victoria. Mm-hmm. Now, we had two wrestling deaths in February. The first one, at age 78, Tony Altimore passed away on February 20th, known as the Sicilians. One
that's
half
right.
of Sicilians.
Him and Lou Albano, your pal.
And sadly, our boy, we talked about him in our last year of pay-per-views, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, passed away on February 10th at the age of 44. Of course, enlarged heart problems from all the drug use and drug abuse of years and years and years, and just had a heart attack in his sleep, didn't wake up. It was very sad. Another one that hit me pretty hard.
Yeah.
It was always a huge, we've chronicled it here, how big of Mr. Perfect fans we were, and you know, what he meant to us growing up as a fan in that era. So it was cool seeing him with that one last run at 02, and a guy that still looked like he had it. Like, I still feel like he could have came back again if he wanted to, and to pass away so young sucked.
Yeah, it definitely did. And my brother was a big Perfect guy, and our man Johnny Reckless, big Perfect fan. Very sad. Not the last one this year that would bum us out. There's usually one a year. 2002, it was Bulldog. 2001, I don't remember who passed away in 2001. 2000 was Yoko.
Mm-hmm.
99, Owen, obviously. 97, Pillman. I'm trying to remember 98, but I'm trying to remember somebody passed away in 2001.
Spicoli in 98.
Yes, Spicoli was in 98, early 98. I'm trying to think who passed away in 2000. Somebody passed away in 2001. Mm-hmm. And obviously 02 was, again, Bulldog. And then 03 was Perfect. And there'll be another one later on, which upset me greatly, too. All right. Oh, do you have more? Of course.
Yep. So we got someone who left the promotion in February, a longtime stalwart, D'Lo Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestled 679 matches in his career. Final record, TV. He has it here as TV record. I don't know if that includes pay-per-view or not. 135 wins, 113 losses, and 17 no contests. Final match, he lost to Booker T on the February 10th edition of Raw. And on January 20th, he had shown back up on TV along with Teddy Long as his manager, former referee, now getting into the managerial game. And that run does not last very long as D'Lo's released just a couple weeks after that union started. We have a few other returns, debuts, and injuries. We'll cover those as we move along, though. We'll come back to the details here from Steve. And one debut was Brian Kendrick, debuted on the 130 SmackDown. We'll get to know him a little bit coming up. Raw now past 508 episodes, SmackDown 184, Velocity 40, Heat past 235. TNA has now had 33 pay-per-views, and Ring of Honor celebrated their first anniversary.
Yes.
Standard Heat, we had Steven Richards defeating Spike Dudley. Tommy Dreamer defeated Michael Shane, and the Dudley Boys beat Rene Dupree and Lance Cade. On No Way Out's Heat, the official pay-per-view version, Rey Mysterio defeated Jamie Noble.
How about that? Demoted to Heat after being...
Yes, and they mentioned it. They call it out on the show. I think it's Taz that references it.
Yeah, really weird. And by the way, Kendrick debuts not as a wrestler,
right,
but in another strange strange character, and we'll talk about that when we get to the match that he's involved in. All right. Our opener was not what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be something else, right? Is it this match? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up not happening.
Right.
Why don't you give us the background before we talk about the two guys?
All right. On the January 20th Raw, Chris Jericho wrestled Test. 5 minutes into the match, Jericho grabbed the chair and swung, but he missed Test and hit Stacy Keibler. The next week, Jericho came out and blamed Test for ducking and not taking the chair like a man. Shawn Michaels then appeared and took offense to Jericho's comments. They had a short back and forth until Michaels charged the ring and ran Jericho off. The next week, Test and Stacy returned and confronted Jericho. Christian jumped Test, but Test fought both men off. Later that night, Jeff Hardy got involved in a Rob Van Dam Kane match and got beaten down for his troubles. Michaels made his presence felt again and gave Jeff a come-to-Jesus speech, telling him it was time to finally reach his potential. Jeff flipped out and was met with some sweet chin music from Michaels. The next week, Test defeated Christian to open Raw, and Hardy got involved to save Stacy from impending trouble. Later that night, Jericho defeated Hardy in a sloppy encounter. We also found that Jericho would be taking on Test at No Way Out. On the final Raw before the pay-per-view, Michaels and Hardy teamed up to beat Jericho and Christian when Hardy pinned Jericho. But on a bigger note, Test and Stacy missed the show due to weather. Vince was not happy with that excuse, and Test was pulled for the pay-per-view, and his push was cut short. Jeff was then put in a spot against Jericho. Heading into the match, rumors were swirling that Michaels would be in the house to back up his new kind of protege, Jeff Hardy, against his new arch-nemesis, Chris Jericho. After No Way Out, Jeff Hardy then began a storyline with Trish Stratus, began saving her from Steven Richards and Victoria. Hardy and Stratus had a brief on-screen relationship that saw them talking backstage and even kissing and teaming together in matches, and it was implied that they were beginning to date. In the midst of the angle, Hardy was abruptly released on April 22nd. The reasons given were release for erratic behavior, drug use, and refusal to go to rehab, and a clearly deteriorating ring performance and constant tardiness and no showing of events. In his own defense, Hardy claimed he was burnt out and needed time off as reasons for leaving. Hardy would not be gone forever and will return in just about 3 years, and will chronicle his adventures when he returns. So Jeff Hardy's last pay-per-view match here for 3 years, stepping in for Test. And Hardy's first pay-per-view match was, what, King of the Ring 99? Was that when they had that match with the Edge and Christian?
Yeah, when they won the belts, or had they already won the belts? No, they won them on Raw.
Yeah, and then they defended them against in that with the Acolytes or whatever.
And then they turned on
Hayes.
Michael Hayes. Yeah. Honestly, now we'll dive into the match. The release does not surprise me, considering what I watched here.
Yeah.
He was a disaster. You could see it. Pain when he got, even when he got in the ring, pain everywhere. His hair's all screwed up looking. I mean, we're talking about Jeff Hardy. Doesn't exactly always look.
Yeah. No, he does look a bit out of it. But actually, watching the match again, I thought he was a little bit more coherent than I remembered it being. Like, I was really looking for a complete train wreck, and I didn't think it really fully ended up being that. So I was a little sad at the time Michaels wasn't on the card, but I guess it made sense to keep him off and keep him on the big pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
And also, do you think, Scott, part of it was they didn't want him out there in Montreal?
Well, yeah, of course. Right. That doesn't go on away.
Right. No, because he does come out.
It's been 5.5 years. Yeah.
And we'll get there in a few minutes. He does come out when he does get booed. But Jeff Hardy's kind of out of control with the paint, sloppy looking, like you said. Gets off to a fast start, not moving as fluidly as normal. Jeff hits a nice springboard dive to the floor. Jericho doesn't seem like he can really get going. Hardy keeps him off his feet. And then Jericho finally spikes him down to the ring steps and stops him. Jericho grounds Hardy, goes to a chin lock. Hardy gets a couple of nice comebacks that Jericho cuts off, and the crowd's really rallying behind Jericho here. And I thought Coach, this is what we kind of disagreed today. I guess we'll talk as we go along. I thought Coach did an okay job just calling the action. I feel like he knew he wasn't JR. Like, and I know you said like he kind of sucked at getting the stories across. I think because he wasn't trying to. I think he knew that his job was just go out there, fill in, call the action, let Lawler help you out, and don't get in over your head.
I'll go with that. Because I like Coach, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here.
I mean, it's his first ever pay per view gets thrown in there, working with the King, who's starting to mail things in a little bit, and I think he was really probably just focused on let me call the action, let me not fuck up,
right,
and not try and beat Jim Ross.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it in this match. I more see it in the next match where he kind of tried to go outside his, you know, comfort zone, and he made a couple of flubs. This match he's fine, but you're right. I like that reasoning that he was just kind of, you know, driving the speed limit.
Right.
Put it that
exactly.
way. You know, he was just kind of going along. He was kind of setting King up with softballs and let King kind of do his thing. I'll mention it when we get to because the next match he does something really stupid, that he probably didn't need to, but,
so Hardy ends up surviving the walls. And I thought the match was good. Still feels just like a tick off, though. I think something was there that made it feel just a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho gets his foot on the ropes after a swanton. He gets some good near falls. Jericho has a top rope powerbomb in the walls for the win. And I thought this ended up being a pretty good opener. I thought it didn't really hit the potential you'd maybe expect from these two guys. But with the state Hardy had been in into 03 and knowing where he was headed over the next month, I think it was actually more impressive than you may have thought.
Right.
Michaels comes out to help Jericho. Mm-hmm. And Christian then comes out to help, to help Hardy. Then Christian comes out to help Jericho. HBK gets booed, and then the cheers kind of come in pockets for him. And, of course, Michael's first Montreal appearance, 97. So I think they had him save Hardy to maybe hope he gets cheered. And I think partially that's why he didn't wrestle. And I think the other part was he really wasn't back doing a full-time schedule yet. So I think they were trying to save him for big matches.
Right.
And I think that was going to be WrestleMania, not here. So,
mm-hmm.
But I liked this opener. I thought it was fine for an opening match. A perfectly acceptable 2.5-3-star match. I thought both guys worked pretty hard, and even though Jeff was a little bit off and not Jeff Hardy, like if this match was 2 years earlier or even a year earlier, it probably would have been a little bit better. But Jeff, you could tell, like I said, was definitely burnt out.
Yeah, he was not all there. It was a little better. I would say 2.5. I don't know if I'd go 3. 2.5. And it was not as bad as I remember the last time I watched it, but you could definitely tell that he's not all there. And Jericho did a hell of a yeoman's job of kind of keeping the match going. But you could tell that Jeff's not all there. And, you know, his you know, makeup's all sloppy. And he's just a mess. He's probably better off being gone. And who knows after that. But to not want to go into rehab, you could tell he just was... Being burnt out's one thing. But to pretty much refuse getting help for your life, definitely not in a wrestling state of mind. And right now, the way the roster is, with a lot of impending moves and things... Excuse me. I don't think Vince had any patience for, you know, flakes. His brother's doing just fine. We'll get to him in a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
His brother's on a roll. But this might have been the one time in Matt's life that he actually had the upper hand in a career on Jeff. because Jeff's a mess here. So, but you're right. The match is not as offensive. I guess it's a little disappointing. It could have been better.
Right.
And it wasn't. So, a little under 13 minutes. I felt like every match on this, I usually have the wiki page up while I'm watching it at work. If I'm on another screen doing something else, I'll take a peek to see lengths. I didn't do that tonight and today. And I felt like every match was long, some in a good way, some in a not so good way, mostly in a good way though. But this one went longer than I thought. I didn't think this match went almost 13 minutes, but it did. And Jericho wins to set himself up for what's going to happen to him in 6 weeks. But, yeah, no, I mean, it was perfectly acceptable. Not a typical Jeff match, but as you can tell, he was pretty much just going through the motions and cashing checks, and in another couple months, he wouldn't be. So, all right, next up, we have our first title match.
That's got to be Kane!
Yes, it does. Our first title match of the evening, the World Tag Team Championship on the line. Your champions, as JR mentioned in the Sutton Report, once again, the team of Lance Storm and William Regal, who won it back the night after the Royal Rumble from the Dudleys with the help of cheap Sean Morley. And they take on a little put-together team. They kind of had been teaming end of 02 and into the beginning of 03, and that's a team of, as mentioned, Kane and Rob Van Dam. Could you give us a little background here, Jer?
Well, as you mentioned, the titles did change on 120 the night after the Rumble when the Dudleys had won, but Storm Regal then beat them down and Morley restarted the match, and then we had new tag team champions. On the 2-6 Raw, after his final match team with Booker T, Batista and Randy Orton attacked Goldust, so we'll get to them later.
Why are they together?
After beating him down, they threw him into an electrical box and caused him to get Tourette's syndrome. So I don't think we see Goldust on pay-per-view again now for a little bit. So he would do this Tourette's gimmick where he cap, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, just yelling random stuff.
Sounded like Kukla, Fran, and Ollie there.
Yes, he did so.
Oh, God.
So that would go on for a little bit, and then Goldust would get released later in the year without really doing too much more. So that kind of ended his push with Booker, that he had a really good 2002.
Yes, he did. He did a very good 2002. We'll play the epic promo at our next vault, the promo that he cuts with Triple H and Flair when it's just the height of the Tourette's. It may be one of the funniest skits in the history of Raw. Really is hilarious. But we'll play that at the next vault.
After facing each other in a match on the 2-6 Raw, Kane and RVD teamed up a week later and defeated 3-Minute Warning, and the following week this match was announced, and RVD would defeat Storm in a singles bout. So back to Regal and Storm as champions, which I liked. RVD and Kane I thought were a good pairing to keep them both in the picture since they've been pretty much flushed out of the main event now. RVD gets a good start, quick reversals, and some mat work to start things off. Regal goes stiff, and this scared the shit out of me. So he gets slammed by Kane, right? Was it Kane?
Mm-hmm. Choke slam. Yep.
And all of a sudden just goes completely, like, paralyzed. And it was a scary spot, and Storm saves the pin, and, like, Regal kind of rolls to the outside, and then he kind of gets it back together, and he kind of clears it up outside on the floor. Did you notice that?
A little bit. I thought it was just good selling. But maybe he got a stinger.
Yeah, I think he like bumped on the back of his head or something because he literally looks like he can't move, and they kind of panic. And Storm like dives into the ring and breaks up the pin. It was really weird looking. Like if you go back and look for it again. So RVD and Kane work over Storm as Regal clears up. He gets back in, and the champs finally take over. Storm, I thought, was very aggressive, and I thought all four of these guys had pretty good chemistry. Which I guess you figure Storm and RVD had worked together a lot in ECW, and RVD and Kane were quickly building rapport. Kane makes the hot tag comeback, and we get a cool finish as Storm blocks a chokeslam on Regal by twisting Kane's mask, and it blinds Kane, and he chokeslams RVD by accident. RVD storms off frustrated and leaves Kane alone. So a pretty good tag match here. I thought I like these champions. The refreshed division is still holding up, and RVD and Kane, I thought, were good challengers too.
I think I'd always thought that Regal and Storm got a bad rap here in this little stretch. I don't think they got as much respect as they deserved. They were a really good team. Worked well together. Similar type wrestlers. It was good to, you know, still see Storm in the mix. I kind of dug this RVD Kane team, but this is where Coach really blows one here. I think this is where the one time JR, he tries to kind of push the speed limit up a little bit. He goes, 1 year ago, RVD made his debut here against Goldust. No, he didn't, dumbass. He made his debut at Invasion 2001.
Well, maybe he meant his No Way Out debut.
Well, maybe we should have said that, but again, I'm gonna amp back my, I don't say hatred, I don't hate Coach, my criticisms, because I think I agree with you that he was just kind of training wheeling it through these matches just to not make it sound completely awful. I love the match, I really do. All four guys work well. I still think Kane was a really viable worker. Even after the botched, you know, what happened at the end of 02, I still think he was a good worker, and I still think he was fine for the roster. Same with RVD. I like all four of these guys. I think this is a fine match. 920, good length. Dad, I saw nothing wrong with this match. I mean, it's not five stars, but
no, I
saw nothing. I saw nothing wrong with this match at all. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
I like the ending with the chokes, you know, and I like the way they sold it. I'm glad they did a replay because they were just like, oh, Kane screwed up and he and he chokeslam RVD, and we're like, well, why? I mean, why would he just do that? I mean,
right.
Then they played it slow, and they showed that Kane's mask was a little cockeyed, a little gogoots, and Regal shoved RVD into him, and he couldn't see. So at least I'm glad they added some logic to that instead of just, oh, he chokeslammed by accident, and then we move on to the next match. I'm glad that they actually did a replay. And Coach, I will say, Coach did a good job of that.
Yeah.
I will say he did a good job of that, kind of walking us through the logic of, well, why did he chokeslam him? Well, a guy got shoved into him, and he couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
So, natural instinct, I'm being attacked. I'm going to defend myself. I liked Coach and Lawler kind of walking us through that ending. I think that was very good on their part. But, yeah, a good match. Really, really good. Montreal crowd through the roof. I think Aaron said he was – did he say he was at this show? I think he did. Great crowd. Great Montreal crowd. Really hot for most of the night. They really didn't have any dead spots. Yeah, there's not much more to say. Really good match. Love Storm and Regal. Solid team. And, you know, I like RVD and Kane, too.
Yep.
So,
agreed.
Top line. I like it.
All right, we go backstage where Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore catch up with Jeff Hardy. They give him shit about losing, and Jeff smacks him and then walks off.
That was funny. And Matt Hardy is up next.
Mm-hmm.
Our second title match of the evening, the Cruiserweight Championship on the line. Your champion, a guy that I don't know why, I just like more and more I like him the more I watch him back in this time. And that's Billy Kidman, fleas or no fleas. I really like Kidman. Yeah. I think he's a great worker in the Cruisers. And he takes on Matt Hardy here.
He's a good like steadying hand in the division.
Yes. Yes, I agree 100%. A little trivia, JR. I typed in this morning. Do you remember the Matt facts today for this match?
This was the T.
Mm-hmm. He likes
low-fat milk. Weather, right?
Yep, he does not like snow and ice, and he likes his tea with, what do you say, milk and
honey
sweetener.
Or something, like
something or milk or sweetener, something like that. Someone do a tea, and he hates snow and ice. Any background here? How do we get to this match?
Yeah, Matt had spent weeks leading up to this match training with Shannon Moore to make weight. On the 130 SmackDown, Kidman defeated Moore in a match, but Hardy came in and dropped Kidman with a twist of fate after the bell. The next week, Matt pinned Kidman in a non-title match, and after the win, he promised he would drop 10 pounds to make weight and be eligible to challenge for the belt. Matt accomplished that goal, and the match was set for this pay-per-view.
Mm.
So, cool little gimmick to meet the weight limit, because he's a little bit bigger for a cruiserweight.
Yep. I think Kidman is, too, though, in a weird way.
Yeah, but he was kind of thin.
Well, no, he was, but he wasn't your typical, like, you know.
Right.
He was
guy.
One thing I think Kidman is very, in my opinion, I feel Kidman's very deceptive because he was tall.
Yeah.
Taller than most cruisers. Taller than Jamie Noble. Taller than Tajiri. Taller than typical cruisers. So Kidman always looked bigger when he really wasn't. I really like this match a lot. Maybe my favorite match of the night. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, Kidman's still a strong champ coming in here. Like we mentioned, Hardy's gimmick was awesome. And he was a great dick in his ring mannerisms here, mocking Kidman with the jumping jacks and everything. Taz gets a good discussion going around Matt Hardy's weight and if he can maintain the division limit. And this is where Taz really started to kind of push Hardy's character work and help get him over with the nut butter and banana juice regiment. And he's Shannon Moore loves banana juice and all the stuff. And like he was really helping push along the Hardy. Like you could tell they hung out and came up with ideas to help get him over. And I thought this is where Taz starts to really improve as far as like doing homework and stuff like that.
Speaking of, on a side, before you continue, I love the spot where Taz goes, you know, Matt likes his BJ. And then all of a sudden Cole pauses and goes, BJ? And then there's another pause. Yeah, banana juice.
Yeah.
It was really great. Unbelievable chemistry.
It was really good. I liked it. So Hardy uses his size to dominate the match. Gets a nice neck breaker for an air fall. Taz says Hardy dropped his yam bag across the back of Kidman. He's really just locked in here. Mattitude, Mac, it makes you act like a possum. At one point he said when Matt kind of faked an injury. Kidman comes back, he's quickly cut off. Kidman blocks a twist of fate for one last gasp, and he fends off both but misses the shooting star press. Hardy then grabs a twist of fate, and Kidman survives again, and then Hardy hits a top rope twist of fate to take the title. Very different, but very well worth cruiserweight match. A lot of heavy blows.
Yep.
I thought Matt would be the perfect heel champion here, a bigger cruiserweight, and the strong Hardy pushes on. And I like this whole package. Like I said, Taz and Cole were great. Hardy was great. Shannon Moore was good outside, and Kidman's been a very good champ and will continue to be a steadying force in the division.
Yep, I agree 100%. I love the stretch here, Matt, and I call them his Chinese restaurant tights.
Yes,
those weird pants that kind of look like wallpaper at a Chinese restaurant. But yeah, I mean it's fantastic. I don't know what it is about Kidman I like as a worker, particularly facing a guy like Matt. And Matt's not a typical, as mentioned. I mean, he's usually 225, 230, which is, what is it, 215, I think is the limit, right? It was just fascinating seeing two guys who really aren't cruiserweights, or one guy who is, even though he doesn't look it, and one guy who normally isn't, really connecting here and putting on a very different kind of hybrid of a strike cruiser match, where there's a lot more some mat based stuff, a lot more strikes, not going crazy with the aerial stuff till really the end. I love watching Kidman do the 450, right? So Shooting star. I love when Kidman hits it. He's perfect. He drills it perfectly. Whether he misses it or makes it, it always looks good.
Yep. And I like that he kicked out of the first Twist of Fate, and then it took that second top rope one to really put him down. I thought it kept Kidman looking strong.
Yep, I agree. Matt's just locked in right now. I'm sure
he dropped his yam bag across his back.
BJ, that's really funny. Yeah, I love listening to. They really are just on fire right now.
No, they're great. The next 2 years, they're very good. Three. I think they're good right through early 06.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they're on fire. And it's a good roster for them. There's not a lot of characters. They don't have to deal with a lot of the hullabaloo on Raw with the character development. And SmackDown's just all about these very simple, straight-up feuds involving belts or respect or that kind of thing. And it works for them. Lawler and JR can kind of get away with meandering through these weird Raw storylines with Jericho and Shawn and obviously Triple H or whatever he's doing. Cole and Taz are in this good mode. And these very simple put together storylines, simple feuds. I mean, I would say the most complex. Would you consider Matt maybe the most complex character on Raw? I mean, on SmackDown. I mean, Kurt's pretty straightforward. Brock's pretty straightforward. Matt's gimmick is very complex.
He's up there if he's not the one. He's definitely,
you know what I'm saying,
in the mix. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's good for the division too. But anyway, fantastic match, and Matt Hardy is your new Cruiserweight champion. And he kind of plays with that for a few months, which is good. I think the lower to mid card really needed a good heel like him to kind of carry things for the next few months. So, fantastic match. I really liked it. I would give it 3 stars, definitely. And, the run of Mattitude continues.
All right, we head backstage. We find Edge has been wiped out. He's now unconscious. And this, of course, is to cover for a neck injury he suffered, required to have a C6 and C7 vertebrae fused. Discovered the problem one night at the gym when he couldn't lift up a weight, and this would sideline him until the spring of 2004. So over a year, Edge would be on the shelf. And do you think, I mean, it's rough timing because he was really, throughout 02, getting his shit together. You know, he has really worked with some great guys, and he had that good match with A-Train in December where he kind of proved he could carry someone. He seemed primed to be in the main event mix here, because we'll talk about the match he's supposed to be in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And this puts him out. So it seems it really derails his momentum. Did you feel like he was still prepped to be something this year, or did you think he was going to be taking a step back? Like, do you think this helped him to recharge, or do you think it was it hurt him?
SmackDown was a roster that he definitely could have been a key cog in, as things have changed, with Brock as the top face, Kurt as the top heel. He had history with Kurt. Maybe he had a feud with, maybe the feud with Eddie would have continued. Maybe Benoit would have turned heel and Benoit and Edge would have feuded. I think he would have been okay. As the year progresses, I think we'll try to get back to, I'm going to write this down. I want to get back to that question when we get to like July, August, September, because as the roster kind of, you know, Vince gets full blown in and that kind of thing, I don't want to give up too much away as we move on. But I think this is a better question to answer like in 6 months when SmackDown really goes through a lot of some changes. The hiatus really does things for him when he does come back in 2004, because it leads to a character change I don't think anybody really expected, but of course worked much for the better for him for the rest of his career. But to answer your question, I think we need to wait till like August, September, look at SmackDown again and see if he would have fit in anything that had happened to that point. So I'm not quite sure. What about you? Do you think it was better off for him?
No, probably not. I mean, in a way, I don't know if he could have kept up what he had going on at 02, but
right.
I think missing a year, I mean, if it was like a 3-month injury maybe, but missing over a year and then knowing you're going to take time, and we'll see it. It takes time for him to get back into the flow, get his act back going in the ring, and recapture some of what he had built throughout 02. So, no, I don't think it was a good thing.
And you and I see his first vignette live.
Yes, that's true.
We'll talk more about that way down the line. But, yeah, I think because SmackDown was so young and so diverse but not loaded with a lot of egos, unmanageable egos, let me word it that way. I'm sure there was egos on SmackDown, but not unmanageable like the guys on Raw, that's for sure. I think he would have fit. But I want to go back to this question in like September and see if I feel the same way. All right, next up is a match that I got to be honest with you, JR, I totally forgot about until I watched it today. Totally forgot this match happened. It was pretty funny. Let's get a little background on these two before we get to the match, because it kind of goes back to October and then reemerges after the Royal Rumble. So what is our backstory?
On the 123 SmackDown, Undertaker emerged and let Big Show know he wanted revenge on him from when Show threw him off the stage the week after No Mercy.
Yes.
Heyman then came out and said he could face Show's running buddy, A-Train, instead. Taker won the match with a new finishing hold, a triangle choke. Over the next couple of weeks, Paul Heyman messed with Taker, promising Show each week, but never delivering. The first week, Heyman brought out undercard wrestler Brian Kendrick, who was dressed in a messenger's outfit. He sang a telegram to Undertaker on behalf of Big Show, and Taker did not take kindly to that and wiped him out. A week later, Undertaker came out, and another large wooden crate was lowered to the ring. And the crate door opened, and Brother Love popped out. He reminds Taker that he was his original manager and talked about Love before Taker snapped and chokeslammed him. That was a pretty cool cameo on spot.
Yes.
Nice callback. The next week, Heyman had another box lowered, and Taker stood in the ring awaiting Show. And this time, a returning Chris Kanyon popped out, dressed like Boy George. There we go. That was a weird intro.
Yes. Long life.
So yes, Kanye was dressed as Boy George and sang this song on behalf of Show. Taker quickly dispatched of him, and 1 week before the show, there were two boxes in the ring. Taker came out. He opened the first one to find a puppy. The second one was empty. As Taker was looking in the empty crate, Show jumped him from behind and dropped him with a choke slam. Did you like that? I kind of like the build. It was kind of unique.
I did too. I thought it was hilarious. I absolutely did. At first I didn't realize it was Canyon. I'm like, who's this freaky looking dude? It's like hair was all weird, and then Cole mentioned it's Canyon. I thought it was hilarious. I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot.
I have kind of fond memories of these SmackDowns because it was during a time where I was working nights at Ascend Media, and I'd come home. And I usually just taped SmackDown, and I'd watch it like in bed or whatever before I would sit. Yeah, I'd get home at like 2 in the morning or whatever, and you have a hard time falling asleep, so you'd kind of lay there and watch TV. So I would I remember watching these and seeing these vignettes building to the show. So this is always kind of one that stuck with me, the build to this. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was different. I thought it was unique. And a way to kind of get back to the well with this feud, but I thought they made it interesting again in a way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I got to be honest, I totally forgot about this match. Forgot about it.
They've had a lot of just kind of random forgotten feuds, but so we get the payoff from October. Interesting build. Big Show and Heyman are kind of a cool team, actually, when you look at them here. Taker gets a massive pop. Big Show goes right after the back and uses his side advantage. Taker quickly fends him off and starts unloading with some stiff offense. Taker chair backfires, back and forth flow continues. Show attacks the back some more, and there's good offense that looks strong due to their size. Good commentary here, talking about how all of Taker's big moves rely on picking an opponent up, and Big Show's too big to pick up, plus Taker's back is bothering him. So I thought that was really good analysis. by Cole and Taz. Big Show goes to give a bear hug, and the first time the match slowed down at all. Taker gets busted open, and Show starts attacking it with strikes and headbutts, and we get some pretty good Taker wobbly selling. The Hart crowd rallies him, and some good Taker near falls. The match was a little bit long, but I thought they worked hard. They had pretty good chemistry, and the feud actually felt fresh, even though it's one we've seen before. So Taker locks in a Dragon Sleeper, which is his new finish, the Triangle Choke. Triangle Choke. Well, no, was the Dragon Sleeper a Triangle Choke? Because we had Triangle Choke in our other notes, but it was a Dragon Sleeper, wasn't it?
Well, isn't it the Go-Go Plotter, or they not call it that till much
later?
No,
that came way
I thought
later.
He said Triangle Choke.
No.
Did Cole say Triangle Choke?
I think we
I thought
said
he
that.
Did.
I thought he did no, the Dragon Sleep. I thought he did the Dragon Sleeper, which is the one where you put the guy's head under your arm.
No, this is the one where he puts his throat, your throat, on his shin.
Are you sure that's what he did?
Down.
I don't think that's what he did here.
Maybe this is something different then. The one that's considered what?
No, I know what it is. I know that. That's what he would use. Yeah. The Hell's Gate.
Yeah,
but
maybe this is something different then.
Let's see what Graham has. Oh, he has Triangle Choke too. I could have swore he did a Dragon Sleeper. Maybe not.
Looked weird anyway, because it was near the ropes.
Yeah.
So there wasn't really a good camera angle. Regardless, I can't believe I'm about to say this. The next match may come close, but this may be my favorite match of the night.
It was good.
It was fun. I mean, they really beat the snot out of each other. I thought it was very physical. Big Show, you could tell, starting to put the
He was definitely
gut back on. He was a little punchy. But Taker was freaking ripped. Huh?
Yeah, he was
ben
fired
made a point
up
today. His shoulders were ripped. His arm, he was jacked.
Yeah, he definitely
worked out the nacho gut
during that
yeah
time off. So Heyman distracts Taker, breaks the hold after the match. A-Train shows up. We get a pretty cool Taker plancha onto A-Train and Heyman. Taker uses the choke and starts to work submission styles into his style now. Okay, so I have it here in my notes that he locked in a Dragon Sleeper, and then he does the Triangle Choke after. So maybe he did both in the match. Maybe that's what. So Heyman broke the Dragon Sleeper. Train comes out. He does the plancha. Then Taker gets the Triangle Choke, and that's where Big Show taps out. And again, he's starting to work more submissions in as he becomes more of a fan of the MMA style.
Right.
Strong win by Taker and a surprisingly fun power match. And A-Train lays out Taker afterwards to set up the continuation of the feud. So I'm with you. I really dug this match. It was a lot better than I anticipated it to be, and both guys worked really hard. And I definitely didn't see this one coming.
No, I didn't either. I was floored. And we're going to this is definitely the first time, and I mentioned my notes, first time since a year, ironically, many people compare to this one, 1995, where Taker's kind of forgotten. Like he's on shows, but you're not really thinking much about him. He's not in title matches. He's not in anything high profile.
And what a long way he's come in 2 years, huh?
Oh, I know. He was very doughy during the invasion, and he's definitely gotten in shape. And yeah. I mean, even the last...
Just like, but even the matches. Like, do you ever think he would have had, like, do you ever think he would have had a great match at Big Show in, like, 2001?
No. I don't think Big Show could have had a good match with anybody in 2001. I mean, I'm completely floored. And this was just really fun. I mean, they brawled all around the ring. They brawled in the, outside. They were stiffing each other to death. I mean, I think Taker and Big Show like working together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, yeah.
You know, and I think I'd like to think that Taker was kind of motivating Big Show a little bit to kind of, get off his fat ass and get some stuff going here. I thought it was a fantastic match.
And Big Show's definitely in a renaissance. I mean, he sucked for so long in 01 and 02. And then the push at the end of the year started with him attacking Taker and getting the title and all that. And he's really been rejuvenated now.
Yeah. I'm stunned. I really am. Floored. By what I'm seeing. Really good. Just good work. Taker, you're going to see this a lot. I think there's matches throughout this year that are going to shock you about Taker. Maybe the Mania matches, we'll get there. But some of the matches later on in the year really shock you. And Taker kind of lets 2003 kind of go with the flow. I'm doing my thing. There's people above me on the card. Let them do their thing. I'll do mine, and then we'll go from there.
Yep.
He ain't going anywhere. So I think he's just happy with what's going on right now, and it's just amazing. I really was stunned. I'm like, oh god, because I totally forgot about this match. I didn't even realize Taker was on the card. That's how much I forgot a lot of this show when I first put it on today, and I'm like, and I see the graphic come up. I'm like, oh god, really. And then I see the build, and I'm thinking, you know what, JR is going to love this. This is like right up his alley.
So when's the last time? When's the last time they fought or feuded? Was it 99? Well, I guess 2000, right before Big Show got sent to the Fat Farm in the summer. So they haven't really crossed paths since then. So it is pretty fresh. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
it's really been almost 3.5 years since they had a legit feud outside of that couple of months in 2000 leading into SummerSlam.
Yeah, I guess, huh?
It feels like they fought more.
Then they transferred, right? Because that's when they had to have Kane hastily turn heel.
Yeah, because Show got sent down to Show AAA.
Got sent down to you know, get on the treadmill. Have a salad. Yeah, I mean, it was...
And the show was pretty much a jobber after that. So, yeah, I don't think they've really feuded. I mean, outside of the... And even 99, it was pretty limited. They were tag champs and then went from there. So, this might be their first real extended feud where they have, like, pay-per-view matches and stuff. It seems like they fought a lot, but...
Yeah.
Still pretty new. So, all right, after that, we...
great match. Fantastic match.
So we head backstage where Eric Bischoff is warming up for his match. Vince visits, and he's impressed by Eric's karate, and he makes his match one-on-one because Eric is so tough with all his karate, and he had beaten up Jim Ross, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So Vince says, "Oh, no interference, Sean Morley, you are banned from ringside," and Bischoff has to go it alone.
And anybody who interferes would be fired.
Or something. Vince still doing kind of the passive-aggressive thing with Bischoff. He'd been really torturing him over the last month, teasing that he might fire him.
Yeah.
So,
I just can't get over how good that Taker match was. Really, really good.
Married already.
Now we get to another match.
I have to start playing love songs whenever Taker and Show wrestle for you.
No, I wouldn't go that far. Next up, we have what was supposed to be a 6-man tag, but due to an injury, it is not. Tell us about it, JR.
Well, we mentioned Edge's injury earlier. Prognosis not very good with Dr. Youngblood to be out for a year. On the Jerry 20 SmackDown, the seeds of this match had began to be sown. On that night, Benoit had defeated Charlie Haas, and Edge picked up a win on Shelton Benjamin, angering their mentor, Kurt Angle. Later that night, Angle defeated Rey Mysterio, but Rey, Benoit, and Edge all beat Angle down after the match. The next week, Team Angle defeated Benoit and Edge to become the number one contenders for the tag team titles, and Benjamin and Haas would cash in. Haas would cash in a week later. When they defeated Los Guerreros to take home the straps.
Benjamin and Hash. Yeah, so, oh, really?
Sounds like a nice breakfast order. Benjamin and Hash.
Yes. The tots.
Also that night, Angle defeated Benoit in a good match. Benoit was jumped by Team Angle after the loss, but Brock Lesnar and Edge made the save, setting up this match. The six men battled in various combinations over the final 2 weeks, and in the days leading up to this match, Edge's neck injury was discovered. He was pulled from the match. Earlier in the show, Brock and Benoit found Edge laid out, and Edge would be off for a year. Stephanie McMahon offered to allow the two men to pick a third guy, but they said, no, we'll just go alone. So Brock and Benoit now take on all three members of Team Angle. Did you like not having a title match here?
Yeah.
I thought it was cool because we already know the Mania match is all set.
Right, main event's
They've been building it. And nothing would have been really believable. And if it wasn't, it would have been a swerve for the sake of a swerve. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy they didn't do something dumb like we saw a year earlier with Angle and Triple H. I'm glad we didn't have, you know, Brock and Shelton Benjamin and Shelton wins the title show, whatever, anything stupid. It's right. Like, Bill, this almost reminded me of both No Way Out 98 and Fully Loaded 98, where we already have a big title match set.
Right.
We just need to get through this show. So we have the champion in a tag match, and you kind of get to, you just fill in time to get to that big match. Why even tease another feud or another title match? We have our big match set for Mania. No one wants that to change. So, I like this setup here. Brock and Chris Benoit want to go to 2-on-3. I thought Team Angle had an awesome look with their matching velour jackets. And
tremendous.
Really good crowd heat. Great pop for Brock. Great spot for Benoit to be in. Still being pushed to the main event level here after 0-2. Benoit and Brock wrecked Team Angle early. Brock was popping crisp suplexes. Team Angle triple teams to break down Brock. Kurt goes to a rare choke. Interesting structure, I thought, with Brock in the heat segment early on here. Team Angle gets some great teamwork in, and then you get the double heat segment as Benoit gets trapped and gets worked over. And Angle and Benoit wrestling never gets old. You almost forget that they go it again here. And Cole notes that they're 2-2 in their last four showdowns. So another good fact for Cole. I think they've called every match on the show so far. A lot of SmackDown matches.
Three in a row. Yeah, 3 in a row, actually. Yeah.
Classic tag formula with very good tagging and cutting off the ring by Team Angle. Brock tags in and cleans houses with suplexes and his power offense. Benoit and Angle counter back and forth with their finishers, and they know each other so well, so they keep alternating the ankle lock and the crossface. The numbers game, consistent story throughout, and a fantastically strong finish with a tap out and an F5. Benoit looks top level, and Brock looks ready for Mania, and Angle was protected. So I thought it was a very good match. It was smartly booked, built well. You got just enough of Brock and Kurt to tease you for Mania. You keep him strong, you let Team Angle take the falls, and you make Benoit and Brock both look super strong. And I'm curious because, you know, Benoit's booking gets really kind of weird after this, and he looked like such a top-level star here. And it's weird where they go with him after this show.
Yes, I agree. I love the combination. This is probably a notch above Taker Big Show for me. This is probably my favorite match of the night. All five guys. And I know you were immediately enamored with Haas and Benjamin. Those guys were like right up your alley immediately.
Oh, yeah.
The tights and right in your wheelhouse. What a decision to put them with Kurt. That's genius. Pure genius. They're just like him. College wrestlers, you know, Shelton down at Carolina, South Carolina, and Haas at Seton Hall, all good grapplers, just right up Kurt's alley. What a move, genius move, to put the two of them with him.
Didn't Benjamin go to Minnesota?
I thought he went to South Carolina. Oh no, he's from South Carolina. I'm sorry, you're right.
He did. I think he was in Minnesota.
I'm sorry, he's from South. He's from that's right, Orangeburg, South Carolina. My bad. He's from South Carolina.
Yep.
But yeah, he went to Minnesota, and Haas went to Seton Hall. But all good grapplers.
They all worked hard and crisp and
yeah,
and really just beating each other up. It was just a really fast paced, good match. And, again, shows you why SmackDown was in such great shape over this time period here. Just great talents like this were on top of the card. So very, very unique for that show. And, Benoit's booking will be weird. We'll keep an eye on it, but here you would think he was the future of the brand. The way he's standing tall with Brock. You almost think you expect him almost to be like in Brock's corner at Mania or something. They're really building them as an alliance. So,
yeah, he has the same problem. He'll end up having the same problem that Triple H as a face did, and a couple of other guys in 2002. And I'll expound on that when we get a couple of vaults away. A guy is added to SmackDown. Two guys are added to SmackDown that I think kind of hinder. Benoit's growth in the on the brand, but the match is fantastic. I mean, all these guys are all just hard grappling and a lot of sleepers and Haas and Benjamin really, for two young guys, really grasped ring presence, like being in the right, standing in the right place at the right time, knowing where to be, really supporting Angle at every section of that match. And it was just really good. Everybody was in the right place. Edge would have made it even better. I was pretty sad. I was bummed because I had been reading on the sheets and on the internet that there were rumors that Edge was in trouble with his neck.
Right.
So you had a feeling he wasn't going
to. Is there anyone you would have maybe plugged in here, or did you like the dynamic?
No, I like the dynamic. It makes Brock and Benoit to be, you know, psycho nut job. You know, crazy killing the Kurt Team Angle. I think it worked perfectly. Who else are we going to put there that would have added any extra juice? The only thing that would have been if somebody was returning, you know, another guy that was coming back or something like that.
Right.
But otherwise, it really was anybody on the roster. You could have, Eddie maybe. Although they were heels, right?
Yeah,
they were heels. Yeah. So they didn't turn face till for a couple months. You could have turned him face there. Eddie might have gotten some pops. I'm sure he would have. Other than that, though. I was happy the way it is. Benoit and Brock are like that. They're crazy and want to take care of these guys themselves. Showing disrespect to them, kind of a psychological maneuver, a mind game that, hey, we could beat you with one less guy. It really made it seem like Benoit was the number two babyface on the roster and that he was in line for something down the line in 2003. So I agree with you. Very weird what happens after this, but this match is just really good. A little over 13 minutes. Everybody working their butts off. Looking at my old notes, wow, I gave this 4 out of 5. I didn't realize I gave this match such a high grade. But it was great. It was really good.
Yep.
That Haas and Benjamin just seem so much more seasoned than you would think from two guys who just came up like a month before?
Yeah, I mean,
it just seemed like they really got it quick. You know?
Right. The only thing they weren't really doing, they can't talk. I mean, that's other than that, their in-ring is well advanced. So, yeah, I would agree with that.
But at the time, they really didn't need to talk. So we'll learn that. You know, they'll have to deal with that eventually. But at this point, talking was not their necessity.
Right.
So, but I agree with you that that was one part lacking. But at the time, we were okay with it. So there you go. Benoit and Brock Lesnar, your number one contender, you get the win. Gets Charlie Haas to submit to the crossface. Yeah, I love matches like this. You already have your main event. I agree with your theory 100%. Got your main event already. Why come up with some dumb thing to kind of, you know, mess around for 6 weeks and title shots back and all that? What? Just old school. Mm-hmm. Brock's got a shot. Let's have a little fun and do something else. Raw was a little different. You know, you got two brands and only one Rumble.
Right.
So Brock won it. He's set. Raw's a little different. Raw's got to establish something else now. But they can have a little fun here because they haven't established their specific main event yet. But here, why play around? Just go with it, you mm-hmm. know? So there you go. Brock Lesnar, Chris Benoit get the win in the 3-on-2 handicap match. Match of the night. I don't think I say that much about handicap matches, but it really, in my opinion, it was a match of the night. So. Do we go backstage for anything? I don't remember.
Nope.
Any promos or? No, I don't think so. Pumping anything up? No. All right.
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. Mm, I won't go.
Be running for the borderline once you saw this rematch set on paper. Yeah.
Not even the music is putting me in a better mood. this is just decrepit. Why don't you give us the build?
Woo! All right. So the night after the debacle at the Royal Rumble, Triple H said Scott Steiner would not get a rematch. Steiner came out and disputed that, but instead faced Batista that night and won by disqualification. The next week, he defeated Chris Jericho in a number one contenders match to get that title shot rematch against Triple H at No Way Out. After winning the match, Ric Flair, Batista, and a returning Randy Orton, last seen on SmackDown, and then on Raw, given the RNN updates, came out and beat Steiner down, and then Triple H finished him off with a pedigree. The next week, Triple H announced his new group of talent was the Evolution of Professional Wrestling. And a new faction of heels was called Evolution, and Triple H now had his advantage in backup heading into the pay-per-view. I remember for a while, Scott, remember we thought it was going to be Evolution? That's how they kept kind of saying it.
Yes.
E-V-I-L. All right.
God, it wasn't.
First thoughts on this going to rematch, and then give me your thoughts on the formation of this group.
Well, the rematch is the shits.
This is the idea of a rematch.
Oh, the idea? Well, if they had nothing better to do, then all right, fine. My problem wasn't if you needed another match to just fill a slot on this show and you want to give Steiner another crack, fine. But we already realized watching 25 minutes of sludge the month before in Boston, you think, well, let's give it a street fight, no DQ, last man standing, right. Buried alive, first blood, fucking ladder. Well, I want to see Scott Steiner try to climb a ladder. But anything to just add a little extra sex to this match, a little extra something.
Okay.
A little extra sash, a little sachet cachet.
A little sex, huh?
That actually wasn't, I don't know why that came out.
I know why.
I haven't gotten to the second question yet, no.
My lord. Talk about a slip. Jesus.
Sexy.
Don't you know you drive me crazy?
At least you got something for the next. At least you got something when you make the next open. So.
Jeez, Smash needs a little more sex.
Oh God, you could put that together when I said, "Oh, I think I like Big Dick Dudley." No, I just saw that add a little something to this match. All right.
Pedigree. Look at that thong on my little bed.
Oh God! He did go back to the black tights. Nothing, no fancy colors on this show.
Oh God!
I was on such a roll too. I had a great explanation going, and I don't know.
You were. You're all fired up.
I was fired up. I had a good thing going, and then what's worse? I'm talking about Scott Steiner. That's even worse. Jesus. Anyway, let's try and get back on the straight and narrow here.
Oh boy.
Just something that would have had a little something. You know, we already watched them go one-on-one in a straight wrestling match, and it was garbage. So why are you giving it to us again?
This is a joke.
Why does anybody think that
the straight wrestling match?
Why, for the love of God, you would give us the same thing again? There's hundreds of gimmicks you could have given to at least maybe added a little something. Street fight, last man standing, pudding match. I don't know. Anything. I said that on purpose. Just anything. Instead, for some reason, the people backstage thought, you know what? This match was so terrible at the Royal Rumble. Let's give it to him again. Really? I mean, I know maybe you're throwing this feud in the toilet, but really?
Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about this match.
All the good things with the pedigree.
You do realize that, you know, I'm getting more ideas for the DAT playlist going right now. Oh God, that's a bad mix. And number two, it's a faction of heels. Got my attention immediately. And I wasn't sure about the two guys at first. You knew Randy Orton had the pedigree, but we really didn't know much about Batista as a singles guy. He, you know, had a couple matches, but we don't really know. But It's a perfect kind of faction. You have Triple H, who is now Flair. You have Flair, who is now Ole. Is that Prince? What is that?
Justin Timberlake.
Oh God! I thought you were gonna do the. No, never mind. I'm not gonna give you an. I'm not giving you any more ideas. Play just in it. So you have Triple H is now Flair. Flair is now Ole. Orton is Tully. And Batista's Arn. So obviously that was Triple H's idea. And it's a fantastic, fantastic group. It's what Triple H needed. He needed backup easily. You know, he's in this mode now where he wants to have his little NWA 1986 bubble here. He's trying to fill everything that that Rick had 17 years earlier. All right, I've got my belt. I've got my babyface opponents. I need my backup. He created Evolution. So I had no problem with that. That was fantastic. Heel faction. It's like tournaments. Right up my alley. Right in my wheelhouse. But the fact that we don't have anything... Big Sal with the pizza.
Where's my pizza?
One year earlier in the Vintage Vault, we had Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. This time we have Oily Pedigrees and Sal's pizza. Yeah, I don't have a problem with the rematch itself. I mean, you need to fill a slot on this show. But didn't anybody backstage, anybody in the creative go, you know, They wrestled 25. We only have to give them like 12, 13 minutes here. They gave us 24 minutes or 22 minutes at the Rumble, and it sucked. What do you think, guys? Street fight? Last man standing? Something? Nah, screw it. Let them go out there and grapple again. Good. Floor's yours. Your thoughts on the in-ring, because I don't even know what to say anymore. what a Spotify playlist. This is fantastic.
You like it, huh? Oh, boy. All right. What I think of this match? The match that nobody wanted to see. Evolution's officially born. I thought that was a smart move, and like I said, continues Triple H's Ric Flair tribute run.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter looks weird with the manicured hair and the suit. God, it's such
a
far
cry.
Yeah,
really starts. Yeah, it really starts getting into that mode. Yeah.
Such a far cry from his game with the jean jacket and the leather and all that.
And the wet hair. Yeah.
And the crowd was still kind of there for Steiner early. Gets a good reception. Hunter's got the tape.
Decent.
Hunter's got the taped up quad, and Steiner targets it early. Crowd starts to sway behind Hunter as the match starts to go along. I thought Steiner was moving better now that he'd been a little bit more active. He uses a figure four here, and Flair breaks that up to a huge pop. Flair's distraction turns a tide. Hunter takes over, and the crowd immediately just turns on the match, starts chanting boring. Hunter and Earl get into it, and that allows Steiner to come back, and the crowd is booing everything. Earl, Steiner, Hunter. I thought the pacing was better, and they tried to have more structure, but even that was a mess. Steiner kind of gets away from the leg and goes right back to the fucking suplexes. And does it work? At least in the Rumble match, he was targeting the back, and now he's supposed to be working the leg, so he's just going back to these suplexes. Steiner hits a solid fireman's carry from the middle rope. Flair runs interference. Steiner gets an awful Steiner recliner that made no sense after all the leg work. Orton and Batista come out. Steiner fights them off. Evolution gets thrown out. Hunter uses the belt, Steiner kicks out of that, and then Hunter hits the pedigree for the win and a pop. Started well again, but just got really sloppy and unfocused. All the overbooking. Hunter steals another win, and Steiner's pretty much cooked here on out.
Yeah.
Not good. Not good at all. I mean, at least the Roma match had the novelty of being a real fucking historical train wreck.
Yeah.
This one is just...
just boring.
Yeah.
And it's the same dreck. I mean, there's some moments where they go for, like, there's one point, probably like 5 or 6 minutes in, where Steiner tries to go for like an Irish whip. He whips Triple H into the ropes. Triple H is waiting for him to do something, and they just bump into each other. It was just dreadful, dreadful. Nothing good came of this. But it goes back to what I said earlier. Anything? Who the hell was? I think a concert of all these songs would have been more entertaining to the people in Montreal than this 13 minutes of shit. Ugh, just dreadful. Triple H retains the World Heavyweight Championship, but it's just not good. At least, for the most part, things do look up, because you're not sure who he's going to face at WrestleMania, but at least it's somebody. Anything is an upgrade from what we've had so far. If you look at the Raw roster, anybody is an upgrade. Anybody. So you have that to think about. We don't know who it is yet, but at least there's something is an upgrade from what we've seen these first two shows. To the candy shop. The great DAP playlist we got building here. So there you go. Triple H retains his World Heavyweight Championship. Check out Chad Campbell talking about this match on his preview. JR, I'll talk more about that in a little bit on placetobenation.com. But if he could think of anything better, I read his Rumble one. I didn't get a chance to read this one today before I watched the show, but I don't know what he could have come up with. He thought Benoit Kurt at the Rumble was 2.5. So Lord only knows what he thinks this is. So there you go. Triple H retains the world title. All right, let's take a break. We come back. We are down to the last two matches. Huge return. And then a WrestleMania rematch. We're done with title matches for the night. But we have a huge return. Actually, we have three huge returns, actually, in these two matches. Two of them face each other in the main event in a rematch from one of 2002's biggest matches. But first, many words. Hopefully none of them three letters that end in X. Because...
Team Virgin for life.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready.
Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
This is the king of old school, Steve Carino, the true voice of Ring of Honor, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Things are getting sexy up here on the Place to Be podcast. Right. Let's head over to placetobenation.com, a site that needs a lot more sex on many levels. Things might be a lot easier to manage around here. There's more sex. Vintage Wall previewing No Way Out 2003. Chad Campbell looked at the Scott Satter Triple H sex fest we just talked about. A step-by-step breakdown of the step-by-step music video. Josh Richter back from the dead, breaking down that iconic New Kids on the Block video. Ben Morris and the staff put together the five-count top heel turns. Of course, NWO was involved in that list. The knockout round of the World Cup of TV characters continued on, as well as Chad Campbell's binge-watching of the G1 Climax Night 8, and revisit last night's podcast as well, Place to Be podcast, July and August, all-time pay-per-view cards. We got a big day coming on Friday. Make sure you visit the site. A lot of really cool pieces leading up to SummerSlam this weekend. And next week we'll be back, of course, breaking that show down on a couple different programs. So, placetobenation.com, facebook.com/placetobenation, Twitter, place number 2 be nation, and info at placetobenation.com if you want to get involved. Oh God! Okay,
it's a close race.
Sex is ratings.
Looking at the the World Cup today.
Yeah,
Gilligan is hanging in with Jesse Pinkman. Only 37-25. Keep voting, folks.
How's Elaine doing? She's still romping Rose.
Elaine's up big. Yeah, poor Rose getting hammered. It's 43-19 right now.
Tough matchup for her.
And Jean-Luc is leading Scooby by just 6.
You need Jean-Pierre Lafitte. He'd be doing much better.
Jean-Luc didn't wear an eye patch.
So Brandon Walsh trailing the push from the supporters on the Twitter feed. Jason Priestley's retweet, not enough. So he's down 17 right now. But
let's see.
Monty Burns.
6245.
Frazier.
Who are the 11 people? We're still trying to figure who the 11 people are that voted for the trash heap.
I don't know. Big Fraggle Rock fans.
And Frazier comfortably ahead of Ari. Yeah, that's Ari. That was yesterday's. The day before, we had a couple interesting, nice matchups. And we're just giving you scores. Please, yeah. PlaceBeNation.com, if you've not voted yet, go vote. Beaker. Well, Fox Mulder closing in. Beaker's only up by 3 right now. 42-39.
I'll tell you who's another sleeper in all this. We've mentioned a few. Uncle Phil. Don't discount the Fresh Prince crowd.
Love Uncle Phil.
Very strong character.
Yep. Tony, obviously. T, as Paulie Walnuts called him. Blowing out Louis. Is that bumming you out? That Louis C.K.'s taking a... It's 67-16 right now.
Oof. Who's he up against again?
Tony Soprano.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, Louis just got a bad draw. I didn't expect him to beat Soprano. I don't know how many people watch Louis, so.
Yeah. Larry David, 50. Arthur Spooner, 30.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, Anyway, PlaceToBeNation.com. Keep tabs on it.
Yeah, we keep voting.
Keep voting. Got new ones every day.
More matches to come.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Back to the Montreal Delight. Okay. Like mentioned, these last two matches have three returns. Three returns combined. Two of them in the main event, and then this one. Why don't you give us the lowdown?
With every little hoedown.
Every little hoedown of this big return for this one.
After walking out in the dirty into the June 2002, Steve Austin went home to let his neck heal and recuperate his mind and body. It was during that time that Austin had a very public and nasty altercation with his wife, Deborah, ending him allegedly physically abusing her. Throughout the year, Austin's personal life was out in the open as there were more bizarre altercations with Deborah. Despite these distractions, Austin continued to rehab his body and work out like a monster, eyeing one last final lucrative run. As is always the case, sagging ratings and stagnation of the product heals all of Vince's old wounds. And in January, he came calling to see if Stone Cold wanted to come back. Austin accepted, was in awesome shape, and he hoped his neck was healed as he embarked on what looked to be his final run. And he makes his return here. Heading into the Royal Rumble, Vince McMahon showed up on Raw to let Eric Bischoff know he wasn't pleased with how Raw was doing. He implored Eric to shake things up and get the show back on track, or else Eric would pay with his job. On the January 20th Raw, Bischoff promised a giant bombshell and left Vince a message saying he had something big planned. And later that night, Eric came out and said he wondered why Steve Austin wasn't involved in the recent Raw 10 special. He then announced that he was giving Austin space in Dirty Magazine to talk about his life and give his side of the walkout, and invited Austin to return to Raw at No Way Out. A week later, Eric came out and announced Austin wasn't there and went on to pump the magazine article and also showed a Steve Austin Desire video package. On February 3rd, Eric headed to San Antonio to recruit Austin in person. They aired a series of vignettes with the search throughout the night. In the first clip, Bischoff was lost and couldn't find the address. Then he went into someone's house and was directed to a saloon. Eric finds the bar and asks for a martini and gets harassed about not ordering beer, and he's run out of Nikki's pub. At the second bar, Bischoff is told that Austin hasn't been around and gets harassed by a local yokel. Eric dumps a beer on the guy's head and walks out. At the end of the night, Vince came out and announced Bischoff had 1 week left to impress him, or else he would be gone. A week later, Eric opened the show and again announced that Austin was not there, but he had tried everything possible to get him back. Eric turned his attention to Jim Ross and railed on him for not assisting. Eric fired Ross until he could deliver Austin. Throughout the night, we got clips of JR backstage trying to call Stone Cold. Midway through the show, Vince made an appearance and called Eric and Chief Morley to the ring. He gave Morley an opportunity to save his job, but he would have to defeat all three Dudleys. Eric tried to offer Vince some HLAs to save his gig, but Vince declined and fired Eric on the spot. Morley would be decimated by the Dudleys, now sealing his fate and blowing off that feud. At the end of the show, Vince came out to introduce his new GM choice, but before he could do that, JR and Eric came out. JR officially informed Vince that Bischoff was able to secure Austin for No Way Out. Content with his announcement, Vince rehired both men. Vince had reminded Bischoff that he said he would do anything to save his job, so Vince offers to have him join the Kiss My Ass Club. Eric refuses, so Vince makes a match between Austin and Bischoff at the pay-per-view. On the last Raw before the pay-per-view, Eric rehired Sean Morley back as his chief and announced he would have a karate exhibition to prepare for his match. And by the way, the exhibition will be against JR. In the final segment of the show, Eric came out for his exhibition, broke some boards to get warmed up, and announced that the match would be no holds barred. After JR smacked Eric up a bit, Morley came in and they put JR down. Morley produced a cinder block and Eric kicked it into JR's face, breaking the block in half. The King tried to make the save, but Morley wiped him out. JR was left bloodied and beaten as Bischoff celebrated and drank beer. It was announced at the start of the show JR would not return to do play-by-play for the pay-per-view, but was cleared to return to Raw the next night. Well, JR was not going to miss the return of his boy, so he comes out before this match and joins King and Coach on commentary. So, what did you think of Austin's return here? Were you surprised they had it on this show and didn't save it for Mania? Were you excited to see him back? What was your thought process?
Oh, I was very excited to see him come back. No, it was good to have him here because you want to build something for Mania. You don't want to have just him show up at Mania. I'm kind of going with the philosophy you have of it's better to have, you know, something planned for Mania than just waste a surprise. I have no problem with it here. Crowd missed him. The pop in Montreal was through the roof when he came in, when he came out. And he looked great. He definitely looked big. I mean, I don't know if he was on the juice or whatever, but there was rumors I remember there were rumors that's why Deborah was upset, and that's why there is because he was, you know, he was a little too overgeeked, and that's why there was issues in the marriage. But I was stoked for his return. It's funny because we criticized him a year earlier at No Way Out 02 with him and Rock and Triple H and Kurt and Taker and like all these guys are still at the top of the card. And you're like, oh my God, what's going on? We need some. This is different though, because by the time he's back and the two guys we talk about next, the top of the card is established with different people. I don't quite think you're going to see these guys, you know, these standards, you know, the foundation guys shoehorned into titles, feuds and main events and things like that. But you get the feeling, though, that whatever their plan was for WrestleMania was going to be pretty good, because there was a boatload of shine in terms of characters and guys that are here.
The key would be how they used them, mixed them up, though. Like, we can't go back to the same old matchup. So that was the key.
No, exactly. Yeah. No, I agree with you. That's my point. I don't feel I got my point. What I'm saying is I agree with you, because I don't think that I didn't get that feeling with him coming back on this night. I got the feeling things were going to be different. We weren't going to see, who's going to fight Triple H? Oh, is it going to be Austin? And then Rock's going to be number one contender. And
it'll be a lot more sex. That's all we know.
And all these guys, and the matches will be better, and oh no.
WrestleMania, a night full of sex.
Night full of sex. Sexalmania. So I think I felt different, that things were going to be a little different now than they were a year earlier when we had, you know, the Three Stooges and... I don't see it happening here. Austin was back, but there was something different. I felt he was... I don't want to say it was a novelty, but I feel there was... things were a little different now than they were before. Mm-hmm. You were very critical of Austin a year ago. Were you different now?
I mean, it felt a little hypocritical, but whatever. It is what it is. I mean, if you felt things had changed, I did feel a little funny rooting for him after all the stuff that came out with Deborah, because that was really highly publicized.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
It was like on the rumor news and all that. I don't know. I can't remember if TMZ was out at that point yet, but. It was spread wide on the tabloids that he had messed up Deborah. Didn't they have like a fight at a restaurant? She stabbed him with a fork or something crazy like that too.
Yeah, and then she answered the door that night at home, and she had a shiner or something like that.
Right. So yeah. It felt a little weird rooting for Austin after he kind of had really an awful 0-2. I mean, this is a guy that everyone always loved and never said a bad word about, and then all of a sudden he beat the shit out of his wife, walking out of the company. So it seemed like he was headed to a really dark place, and you're almost worried that hopefully he wasn't gonna. Do something crazy and just spiral out of control. And he seems to turn it around and focus himself on getting into shape and returning here. So, I mean, it was cool seeing him back. Again, there was a lot of controversy. A very good pre-match video. I like the build here with the clock ticking and everything else. Mm-hmm. JR returns to the booth. He's all fired up. Bischoff is going it alone. Austin gets just a massive pop. It seemed primed for another full run. It was like almost like the glory days. He had the short jean shorts and the black vest. Yeah. And it almost looked like right out of 98.
Yeah, I know.
And the crowd is going ballistic. Austin is Rex Bischoff off of the bell. Unleashes all the built-up rage from WCW with Bischoff and the past year. It looks like he's just really beating the shit out of him. Shots of the locker room enjoying the assault. The crowd is just super hot. Austin laughs off Bischoff's offense. He hits him with a stunner. He pulls him up. Hits him a second one. Races up again. Then the third one finishes it off. Perfectly booked squash with a molten crowd. Kudos to Bischoff. Just got his ass kicked. I like that they didn't do any goofy offense where he takes control of the match at all. It needed to just be a complete squash.
Yep.
And that's what we get. JR's over the top, but the crowd is feeling it. JR just go crazy. And Austin, it's a fourth stunner after the match.
Yep.
A perfect squash and a great return for Austin. You set up him and Bischoff now being adversaries, and another big name for Raw back in the mix as we head towards Mania.
Yep. It was no words, no promos, nothing.
Right.
Didn't say a word. Came in, beat the tar out of him, and then left.
And it's funny, too, because you think more of the modern days of, like, they load up veterans or big names in time for Mania. And then you kind of look at this show, and it's like, well, they kind of did it back then. You know, all of a sudden, in January, we have Austin back. We got the two guys in the main event coming back. It's like all of a sudden they were loading up again for Mania season.
Yeah.
I think after things started to sag at the end of 02 and early 03, I think they realized they needed some of these guys back in the mix. Mm-hmm. And it would work.
Yes. And we were talking about Austin and the high publicized stuff. Even the most ardent Austin supporters. I mean, Extra Point co-host Dr. G, he is, you cannot say a bad thing about Austin around him. And even he was a little leery about his return. You know, anytime you see, you know, domestic issues, you squirm. But you know, that night, glass broke, and he was marking out like he did for the 5 years before that. So sometimes you just get caught up in the moment. But I do agree with you that you're thinking to yourself, well, is he broke? Is he bored? I mean, was he promised something? That was the thing that concerned me. I said to him, I said, oh, what does this mean? He's going to win the title at
right.
He's going to fight Triple H and win the world title at Mania. I mean, was he promised something? You know what I mean? Was he acting that way? That's where I was getting a little. That was probably my only pseudo concern was, does this mean that, you know, he becomes number one contender and beats you know, faces Triple H at 19, or, you know, that was my only concern, is what did it take to get him back? Because it was the creative thing that left him in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're thinking, what, is he going to, you know, go to SmackDown, beat Brock, take the title, or whatever, you know, whatever. But for that moment, for that, four and a half minutes, I think? Yeah, about 4.5 minutes, we were treated to what Vince called 2 years earlier, the old Stone Cold.
Yes.
And he just beat the tar out of Bischoff, which everybody loved. I think it was, what? And do you think, I think Vince enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was almost a symbolic thing.
Right.
The guy who but the face of the company that won the Monday Night War beat the tar out of the face of the company that lost the Monday Night War.
Did you feel like, though, they already had, it was kind of quick for them to be, like, shitting on Bischoff in kayfabe on TV? Like, I don't know. It seems like they had plans for him to be GM for a while, and here they are, not even a year into his run, and they're always, oh, you're doing an awful job. This seemed kind of weird way to go.
They probably had no other way to go about it for Austin.
Maybe yeah.
This was just a cheap way, you know, a kind of a shallow, simple way to write it up. He gains a lot of his heat back the night after Mania, and we'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah, I mean, it did seem a little weird that already we're, you know, he was only there since July and already Vince is crapping all over him, the big hug and everything. But I think this was more Vince sitting back and reveling in the final symbolic slam dunk that he won the Monday Night War.
Right.
And the face of the company that won the war is beating this tar out of the face of the company that lost it. So that's what I think it pretty much was. So there you go. Austin wins. Doesn't say a word. Is this all we see of him? Was this a one-time thing? Who knows? There was an interesting thought. Did you ever think that, JR, that this was, he came out just to beat the tar out of Bischoff and that was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It could have just been a one-time thing. But, I mean, you kind of had a feeling with Mania coming that he was going to stick around.
Probably.
But yeah. They didn't always, I mean, I feel like they didn't really say, they never said he was back on Raw. JR kind of says that at the end. But I guess leading in, they never said he was staying around. Yeah, they just said
at No Way Out. Yeah.
I guess it was possible.
So, all right. Up to our main event.
Awesome.
Oh yeah. Ugh. Could a theme fit a gimmick any better?
No.
Absolutely not.
Hey, wait.
What? Yeah. Get out of my way! Criscola! Where the fuck are what?
Hey, last week you listened to me, you son of a bitch. I have it all queued up, me and Brad Woodling in the hospital, and I had the music queued up for his wife. And this beautiful moment, and it was ruined. It was ruined and left out of the episode. And why did you do that, Scott Criscolo?
Look, I talked to Brad.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, the fact remains, VKM. Look, I love you. You know I always will.
Fuck you! I don't like you, you asshole.
Your matches are sexy, but your playlists suck.
Right? Oh, is that true?
My Spotify playlists are awesome. Everybody sees them on Facebook. They love
Jimmy Snuka
music. Yeah, Jimmy Snuka likes it too, and Mr. Saito. They
he
says
Spotify. Superfly?
Yes. Yes, he went from coked up wrestler to music player. But the fact remains is, Vince.
He's hitting who again? Christ.
God, he's like the boogeyman. You say his fucking name and he starts beating women. All right, go ahead.
All right. The fact remains is people like my playlist. They're really good. And I said to Brad, I think your wife and your child are going to really like this. And instead, you put all this weird.
Chris Golo. Chris Golo.
Strange stuff.
You say more shit that no one could ever possibly care about. So listen, take your Superfly playlist, shove it up your ass, and I'm going to hit play right now. And we're going to listen to the mix that I made Brad's wife. Oh, so shut the fuck up, sit down, and go back to having sex with Triple H, and we're going to listen to this music right now.
She gets too hungry for dinner at 8. She likes the theater and never comes late. She never bothers with people she hates. That's why the lady is a tramp. Oh, baby, give me one more chance. Show you that I love you. Won't you please let me back in your heart? Oh, darling, I was blind to let you go, baby. But now, since I see you in his arms, I want you back. Summer days drifting away to those summer nights. Wella, 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 tell me more, did you get very far? Tell me more, like does he have a car? If you wanna hang out, you gotta take her out, cocaine. Not zucchini fettuccine or bulgur wheat, but a big warm bun and a huge hunk of meat. Cheeseburger in paradise. Heaven on earth with an onion slice. Not too particular, not too precise. I'm just a cheeseburger in paradise. Woohoo! Nobody knows it. When I was down, Doink was your clown. Woohoo! Nobody knows it. Nobody knows. Right from the start, I gave you my heart. Does she walk? Does she talk? Does she come complete? My homebrew angel just pulled me to my feet. She was pure like snowflakes. No one could ever stain. The memory of my angel could never cause me pain. It's a rare condition this day and age to read any good news on the newspaper page. Love and tradition of the grand design. Some people say it's even harder to find. I looked out the window, seen his bald head. I ran to the fridge and pulled out an egg. Scoped him with my scopes, he had no hair. Launched that shot, he was caught out there. Saw the convertible driving by. Loaded up the slingshot, let one fly. He went for his to see and he didn't have one. Put him in check, correct, with my egg gun. The egg, a symbol of life. Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. So come on, baby, come on over. Let me be the one to show you. I'm the one who wants to be with you. Deep inside, I hope you feel it too. Waited on a line of greens and blues. Just to be the next to be with you. Freezing. Rest his hands on a pillow made of concrete. Again. Oh, feeling. Maybe he wants to see a little bit of Saturdays. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I really, really want. So tell me what you really, really want. What I wanna, oh, really, really, really wanna zig a zig. Ah, some things will never change. Try to show you another way, but staying in the dope game. Now tell me what's a mother to do. Being real don't appeal to the brother and you. You gotta operate the easy way. I made a G today, but you did it in a sleazy way. Selling crack to the kids, I gotta get paid. Well, hey, that's the way it is. Doesn't know that Hunter and me do it in my van every Sunday. She tells him he's in church, but he doesn't go. He's on his knees, and Scotty doesn't know. Scotty doesn't know, whoa. Don't tell Scolo, cause Scotty doesn't know. Ready for war, Joe. How you wanna blow that spot? I know these dirty cops that will get us in if we murder some wop. Hop in your Hummer, the Punisher's ready. Meet me at Vito's with noodles. We'll do this dude while he's slurping spaghetti. Everybody kiss the fucking floor. Joey crack, fuck them all. If they move, noodles shoot that fucking whore. Dead in the middle of little we diddly. Know that we riddle a man who didn't do diddly. Turn lights off. Carry me home, na 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 na. My blood runs cold. My memory has just been sold. Angel is a centerfold. Angel is a centerfold. My blood runs cold. My memory has just been sold. Angel is a centerfold. Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like me? Don't you? Call me Hell. They call me Stacy. They call me her. They call me Jane. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. My amigo el negro Kofi, mommy el negro Slick, mommy el negro Kamba, mommy el negro Akeem, mommy el negro Astarabioso, el carito azoka, y tu no se lo das. I'm so fancy, you already know, on the fast lane from LA to Tokyo. I'm so fancy. Can't you taste this gold? Remember my name. About to blow. Wait, what? Blow. Blood runs cold. Angel is a set. Na 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 na.
Well, another epic playlist from Vince McMahon.
Still not as good as what I can come up with. Sorry.
The world knows
you. Bring it on, VKM. Come back anytime you want. Air Supply, Warren G, Nate Dogg, whatever you want.
Yeah, maybe you should do one to combat it for our next show.
Oh, maybe I will. Maybe I will.
All right. The night
anyway, speaking of great songs. Yes, well, I just want to say, speaking of great songs, yes. Because I wanted to finish my point until he interrupted it. What a theme. Oh, my God, what a theme.
Yeah, and what a build with the helicopter and the video. And I just out of nowhere this comes out.
Yeah.
So then after the Rumble, SmackDown GM Stephanie McMahon announced a big surprise. She had re-signed Hulk Hogan exclusively to her brand. Hogan comes out to a big pop, and out came Vince McMahon, who was disappointed his daughter would bring back this has-been to the show. Hogan wants to face Vince in a match, but Vince balks, and Hogan clocks him. The next week, Vince announces he was Hulkamania's creator, and he can destroy him. He books this match, and The Rock would return live on SmackDown before the show to run the crowd down for turning on him during his match at SummerSlam against Brock Lesnar. But that heel turn had really got started back at the Raw 10 special the month before, when he did a pre-taped piece talking about his time on Raw, and the crowd at the World in New York vociferously booed him. It was then realized that many fans had now resented The Rock for bailing on the flatlining WWE to become a movie star. And they jumped on the opportunity and turned Rock into one of the best heels of the decade. So, to me, you could feel Rock wanted to be an asshole again. Like, it was there. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do it. And they gave him the chance. The fans set him up. And it was fantastic. I mean, his heel mannerisms right back. His facials right back. Being an asshole right back. And I loved in the build here when he shakes Hogan's hand and the spits in his face. Like, what an asshole move.
Yeah, he's so douche.
And he's even the look. Like, he's really, you know, really slimmed down, and he's got the short hair, and just the song. It just looks like a Hollywood asshole.
Yep. I think it fit because he's the one who did the whole Austin took his ball and went home, and then he left.
Right. So I mean, he had all the reason to. So yeah, he was fantastic. It was a great return, and I was happy to see him back for sure, and back mixing it up in this heel run was great. So we also have a crooked referee in this match. Developmental wrestler Sylvain Grenier had applied to be part of the first two seasons of Tough Enough, but due to visa problems, he couldn't compete. One of those issues was straightened out. He moved to Florida, began training. And doing some modeling. Around this time, he met Pat Patterson. The two became friends. Patterson got him a tryout with WWE, and he was eventually hired and sent to OVW. He would make two appearances as Vince's personal referee, one here and one at WrestleMania.
No jokes. I know everybody's thinking it.
I'm not saying anything.
I didn't say you. We got hundreds, thousands of listeners. He met Pat Patterson, and they became friends.
Yes. I should also mention Steve Austin's hiatus had lasted 265 days, 37 weeks, and 8 months.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Steve. That sounds like his math.
So Hogan back to SmackDown, embroiled in this feud. Cool to see Rock back to being an asshole. I like what he called Hogan worthless before WrestleMania 18 saved his career.
Yes.
You are worthless.
That was good.
You're
worthless.
Rock forced heel. And it's a big match for a February pay-per-view. Also new
Huge.
Entrance, like we mentioned, the Dick Hollywood star. Crowd amped for Hogan, full support behind him. Rock healing it up early, stalls around the ring. Rock, again, with the awesome heel turns and taunts and faces, clearly just loves this. Cole notes Montreal ref Sylvain, which is kind of weird, but Rock hits an early Rock bottom, like right out of the gate. And Hogan already, you could tell, is not moving as well as he was in 02. Like, that 02 run seemed to really sap him of his health. He was not moving very well at all. Rock puts on Hogan's bandana and starts whipping him with the weight belt, and a lot of comedy blended into this match. Hogan gets barely any offense. Rock gets an awful sharpshooter.
Oh, it's terrible. They're barely touching toes. It's pitiful.
A blob middle of the match. Crowd stays with it, though. We get a Hulk up after the people's elbow. The lights go out after Hogan hits the leg drop and covers Rock. They come back on, and now the referee is out, and there's a chair in the ring. Vince comes out, and he's acting all stunned. The referee wakes up, gives Rock the chair, and lays back down. He paces Hogan after Vince distracts him. Hogan's bleeding, and Rock hits a Rock bottom. A mess of a match, but I thought it was kind of cool seeing Rock and Vince back together as a unit. Kind of a throwback to the old corporation. Way overbooked, though. Hogan looks cooked. I thought after 0-2 he looked so good, but here he definitely looks baked. Rock was the only highlight, and the Mania stage is set. Vince taunts Hogan after the match. He's got a doctored Hogan shirt that says Hogan sucks, and then he tears it, and he's just jacked, Vince. I mean, he's just so ripped, and he poses.
What you're going to do? Nothing. That was the front of the shirt. Yeah.
And he poses to close out the show. So it's clear where they were headed towards Mania here with Vince and Hogan. What did you think of this match?
I agree with you 100% about Hogan. But you know what? At least he was trying. It's not like we're saying, oh, Hogan dogged it. He wasn't dogging it. He just, you know. He had 3/4 of a tank in 2002. He had about 1/4 of a tank in 2003. But he's 50-something years old. So I'll give Hogan this. Yes, he didn't have the juice he had in 2002, but he wasn't not trying. You could tell that he wanted to give Rock a good match. It was definitely not their match at 18. That was obviously better. But at least Hogan was trying. I feel like at least he was giving his all. But again, we're talking about a guy in his 50s, so
right.
He's only going so far.
Yeah, really struggling.
Yeah, but Rock is just gold.
Oh, yeah, he was awesome.
I agree with you that he was just, you know, bubbling to the surface just to be a complete and utter douche.
Yeah, he completely made this match because the match was a disaster otherwise. But all his personality and hamming it up completely carries any semblance of anything in this match. So, I mean, were you happy to see Hogan back, even though he's kind of hobbling around? I mean, were you... Think it was a good
no,
move.
I was. Oh, I always loved seeing Hogan.
They had to do something with him and Vince at some point. So it was good that they are bringing him here because obviously they didn't get to do it in 02. And the way Hogan left in 02, you felt like he had a little bit more left in the tank.
Yes, I agree. He definitely did. And again, I was. The match was nothing much. It was as good as it could be. It was It wasn't overly long. It was slightly under 12 and a half minutes, which is about fine. A lot of it was posturing. Montreal crowd was through the roof. You know, Canada, huge Hogan hotbed. So everything worked aesthetically in this match.
Mm-hmm.
The match itself was I don't want to say it was trash, but it wasn't as good as 18. And like you said, Hogan was just giving. The difference here is, like I said, Hogan was giving everything he could. He just didn't have as much to give. He does dip into the Fountain of Youth at our next show.
Right.
But he was also facing a guy that was, I hate to say this, more his speed. And boy, did Vince look fucking misshapen. What was that? He looked worse than Steiner. It's like really all like, oh, I gotta take my shirt off, so I gotta get a little extra gas. So he's like all like mangled.
You know, I think it looked weird too with the dress pants, and it was just an odd look.
This is very weird, but yeah, the package was fine. The match, as it stands, was not good, but I don't think it was for lack of trying. I think Hogan gave everything he possibly could. He just didn't have enough. So Rock, I think, gave him a little extra something. But that theme is just, you know, is cooking.
Yeah.
It's like anything. I feel like Jim Johnston's new thing is, take a babyface theme and really make it slow. And then now it's a heel theme. That's what I think. But everything, Rock's cooking here. He definitely is.
But it was great. It was great having these guys back, even though a year ago they all felt kind of played. Here, they're being used in different ways. I like that they're using Rock and Hogan with each other. I mean, here and then Vince and Hogan. It's like these guys are all getting a run, but they're not really messing with the stories we've had going. Like, they're not getting inserted into the title picture. We're not getting Rock in the title mix, or like you said, Austin fighting Triple H. They're being used for other stuff to help round out the already WrestleMania card that's being lined up with,
well,
you know, Michaels and Jericho and Angle and Brock.
Exactly. What you're getting at here is you've got two, I don't want to say suspect, and I'll elaborate on this on the next vault. You have prospective, how do I word it? I want to make sure I got the right word. Prospectively, I think that's the word. Probably isn't, but looking at two title matches that on paper look good, but I think they were a little nervous that Brock, Angle, and whoever Triple H fought were going to be good, but not Mania worthy. So we needed to load things up with stuff on the outside, with some other matches of historical value. That's why I think these guys came back. Austin, Rock, Hogan, Vince inserting himself. And I hate to insult, and I know people are going to think I'm disrespecting Brock and Angle. I'm not. But let's be honest. Looking at that match as a standalone, is that a main event Mania match 6 weeks before? Could that carry the main event of a WrestleMania? There were probably a lot of skeptics. And I'm not disrespecting either guy. I'm really not. But let's just face facts. Is that a main event that can carry a WrestleMania? 6 weeks from then, from March 30th in Seattle, were they thinking, oh, I think we're stoked with Brock Hurt as the last match? They couldn't do Triple H and whoever's the last match. That wasn't going to fly. So I think they were a little leery. And I think that's why they brought Hogan back, Rock back, Austin back. Not to break up those title matches, but to at least support those matches with something that's with some good meat in the middle, in the mid-card of that Mania. And I'll elaborate that more when we get to that on our next vault. But that was my thinking, why these guys were all coming back. Because I think on paper, Triple H and Jericho the year before was a good main event. And then obviously Hogan Rock just was placed in the wrong slot. And even Hogan and Jericho and Triple H admitted that on the Mania DVD. I think it's a Mania DVD. But I think a year later, they thought they needed a little extra meat and potatoes in the middle of the card.
Sure.
So, again, I'm not disrespecting Kurt and Brock at all. But, again, you know, you're talking about an inexperienced guy here. And did Kurt have enough shine to be in that spot? I think that's why they just wanted to have, like, some fallback. But we'll talk more about that when we get to that.
All right, so what did you think of this card as a whole? I mean, it definitely ended up being better than I thought.
I liked it.
The big matches were kind of a stinker. Obviously, Steiner Triple H sucked. And the main event, obviously, was not great, but you get the Rock heel stuff. But the other matches were all solid. I mean, It was an enjoyable show. I thought the commentary was pretty good. You had the Mania. The crowd was great. You kind of get the hype of the road to Mania. So I dug it. I liked the show. I enjoyed watching it way more than expected. I thought I was going to hate it. And take a show, like you said, it was surprising. There's really nothing bad in the undercard. Steiner Hunter was brutal in the main event. Again, not great. But we're in a good spot heading into Mania, I thought.
I thought so, too. I really liked the show. I was blown away. The two matches that I knew I remembered liking the handicap. But I'm telling you, that Taker-Big Show match totally caught me off guard. Like, wow, that was really good. I knew going in that Steiner Triple H sucked. And I don't remember the main event being as bad as it actually was. But again, I preface again by saying what I said earlier.
Right.
Hogan really did give everything. This was not him dogging it.
He just can't move as well. And that magic of WrestleMania 18 is just not there. I mean, the magic is just different.
It's different.
The crowd is great here, but not. I mean, that was just a different atmosphere.
No, the Toronto crowd was, if you're thinking coincidentally, two Canada crowds. That Toronto crowd at Sky Dome was freaking amazing. Although this one was a good crowd, too.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up. So we'll be back Monday night with Scott Keith. We're going to look back at this year's SummerSlam as well as hit up the mailbag. And next Wednesday, Kevin Kelly Show and Main Event. Kevin Kelly Show will have Rob Conway on. And Main Event will have a few of the Core Four with a special guest as well. So stay tuned for that.
Yep.
So everyone enjoy SummerSlam. Please visit PlaceMania.com for all the SummerSlam rewinds. We had the Brad and Chad ranking the SummerSlam show. We'll have your written preview up on Friday. And then a reaction show with Will and his crew will be up on Monday as well. So visit here for the live blog on Sunday night. Hit up Cowboy Goes to Class over the weekend. He's looking at SummerSlam 99. All the SummerSlam stuff you can handle heading into this year's show.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So enjoy that pay-per-view. We'll be back Monday night, Scott. Until then, everyone have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you then.
A little Color Me Bad on Vince's playlist.
Is it I Want to Sex You Up?
Of course, duh. Oh,
okay.
Which I think I was going to say.
Hopefully we'll have a lot of sex in that John Cena Brock Lesnar matchup. That'll make for a
those
good
two
show.
Guys I just can't see putting it.
Putting it where? All right, let's get out of here. We're out of here, Shivani.